This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday, the 19th of July. Welcome to The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs show. I'm your host, Daniel Roberts. On tonight's show, we take a look at the newest AFL Pride group, and later we'll be chatting to Urban Dreaming's Declan Fry about the Referendum Council's recent decision referendum to establish a national Indigenous representative body in Parliament. But first up, there has been a lot of attention on this week's AFL Pride game between the St Kilda Saints and Sydney Swans. In its second year, the Australian Football League wants to demonstrate it is inclusive of LGBTI communities at all levels of the game. A lot of the conversation around LGBTI participation has focused on the concepts of firsts. When will the first male AFL player come out of the closet? Who will be the first professional trans player? But musician, academic and keen community footy player Simona Castricum says that narrative is not helpful. Shannon Power caught up with Simona to find out.
Simona Castricum, welcome to The Informer. You've been involved in footy in one capacity or another. Tell us about what you've done in the footy world.
The last 3 years I've been playing, in the women's league. So I guess in the first 2 years it was in the VWFL. And then, of course, this year things have really changed in terms of the leagues that have shifted as the AFLW comes into working, and I've been playing in the Victorian Amateur Football Association, so the VAFA, for the Melbourne University Women's Football Club. We've got seven teams.
Right.
So above me is our division in NFL and our VFL division. So it's been amazing to train, on the same paddock as a lot of the AFLW women.
Yeah. And what position do you play on the field?
Ruck and centre half forward.
Which do you prefer?
Well, I think I prefer centre half forward, but there's a lot of running to do and I'm a little bit on the wrong side of 40 to do that much running these days. So, and my body, taking the knocks in the ruck, is a little bit difficult. So I've managed to get quite a few games in this year, which has been really good.
Leading up to the Pride game, there's, a lot of focus on the AFL and its inclusiveness in the LGBTI world and vice versa. What's your take on the AFL's inclusiveness on...
I tend to think that the inclusiveness comes from a grassroots level, and that what's unique about the women's competition is that there is a vast majority of players that are queer or that are, lesbian or that would identify as trans or non-binary that are playing the game. And I think that's something to be really celebrated. And I tend to think that story isn't celebrated enough. There seems to be a lot of focus on queer players or, trans players at elite level. And that, kind of sits, quite strangely within what's really happening. So, but there are other narratives at play, and I really, would like to see the AFL focus on those as part of the way to educate the community on how inclusive football already is.
Yeah.
And that might permeate into what can happen in the elite competitions, and particularly in men's AFL, which we know is not a safe space for gay or trans players. And that needs to be, you know, sorted out.
So there's a couple of things there that I'd like to explore.
There's actually a lot to unpack. That's why the question's so difficult. I'm trying to write about it at the moment and I don't even know what my argument is.
You know, sport and identity and gender identity and sexuality, they're all complex in themselves. But you said that there's a lot happening at the grassroots level where there's a lot of non-binary, diverse sexuality and gender being represented. Why do you think that is? You don't often hear that happening in a lot of other sports. Why is grassroots community AFL so diverse?
I think it's run and administered by queer people themselves, or that people that really don't have issues or have perhaps closer relationships with people who identify as LGBTIQA+. And whether it's pub footy, whether it's the Community Cup, which the Recklink Community Cup that was on recently, or whether it's, you know, VAFA teams, women's VFL teams, and now in all these other leagues, they just have existed there for quite some time. So it's not anything new. It's not anything that needs community consultation. But I do think that the trans issue is quite different, because I do think that there is very specific resistance to participation of trans players in some quarters. Overwhelmingly, there's a lot of support for it. But when there's resistance and when those community members or those players don't like it, it's really noticeable. And as a trans player, it's really noticeable.
If you're comfortable to tell us what some of those issues can be for trans players.
Well, the issues are everything from being sledged on the ground to having officials making complaints to the league about me playing. So everything from my very first game 3 years ago when I played for the Brunswick Renegades, there was an official complaint about me playing in that game. And, you know, as recently as about 3 weeks ago, there was another incident as well, which involved, you know, words that were said on the ground. So, you know, and in between that, there's a lot of, you know, microaggressions or glass ceilings. There are other trans players who have experienced like a huge welcoming, you know, in their experience. You know, many other players across the country too. There's a trans player in Sydney, and there's one in Broken Hill. I think there's one in Queensland as well. So, you know, there's a lot to unpack, but there is still a lot of confusion around eligibility.
And how do we get that message across that it's okay for a trans player to play footy or any kind of sport?
Well, I think people need to read the rules. I know when it happened to me in the first instance.
So simple.
It is, isn't it? Okay, so you go read the rules. But so if, you know, in what when it happened to me in round one or my first game that I played for the Renegade, the solution was really just to get that club official from the opposite team to read the rules. But if you read the rules, I mean, I understand my rights, legislation, if you're not around the politics and if you're not around the definitions, it might not make sense to you.
Sure.
So as I understand that the AFL Victoria gender policy says that you need to be through the gender reassignment process and documentation as referred to under Victorian state government legislation. So there's two issues there. The gender reassignment process is an antiquated term. We use the term gender affirmation process, if anything. And that consists of a variety of things, you know, one of which you have to satisfy in order to get a change of documentation to reflect, you know, your desired gender or to reflect your gender. There's also this idea that surgery is part of it, and both the IOC and the AFL have explicitly said that surgery is not a prerequisite for playing Australian rules football.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
So we're on The Informer, enjoy chatting to Simona Castricum, who is a footy player. And I think the fact that I've already forgotten which league and club and division goes to show that there are so many different kinds of levels of AFL play being played in Melbourne, that it is a really sort of broad and influential sport. As we know, living in Victoria, and perhaps one of the reasons why getting you know, the inclusiveness of all communities, right? So you've said that the experience of trans players isn't always universal, but there has been some issues. Do you think that there needs to be trans-specific initiatives carried out within the AFL beyond initiatives like the Pride Game?
Well, I think the first initiative is that there needs to be some guidelines that are written, because I don't think that the gender policy is adequate. I think that each league needs to sit down and develop some kind of code of conduct that clubs need to read and understand in terms of what the crowds can say or can't say, and what players can't say, and therefore what, you know, if any vilification happens on the ground, if any officials, you know, try and intimidate, or if there's, you know, specific, you know, violence or, you know, physical intimidation that happens, that there are consequences. And there also needs to be some education process as well around eligibility. I mean, I'm sick of running on the ground and people thinking that I don't belong out there when I know full well that I do belong out there. Also, there needs to be, you know, some education around, you know, eligibility, so that people aren't knocked back for the wrong reasons. If people are getting knocked back because they haven't had surgery, then those clubs don't know the rules, and those players are being you know, excluded unfairly, and it's, in my view, that's against equal opportunity.
Do you know of any sort of collectives or people or organisations that are working with the AFL and clubs to move this issue forward?
Well, I know that just through my own experiences with transphobia this year, that both Melbourne University Women's Football Club and the VAFA are, you know, very proactive in working towards more understanding. And, you know, I've kind of put my hand up to be a bit more proactive in that as well. I'm towards the end of my career, but I understand that there are a lot of potentially a lot of trans players that are at the start of their careers and that are coming through the, you know, coming through the ranks, and they've just got the opportunity to rise through the ranks and play, you know, as the cliche goes, you know, one week at a time, like anybody else. The mental preparation that, you know, that I might have to do to play certain clubs is quite unreasonable, you know. Whereas, you know, I played another club last weekend and had a great time and shook their hands after the game, and everyone was really good. So you'd want that to happen every week. That's the outcome that we want, is that communities, that everyone that comes to the game and everyone that plays the game isn't threatened or intimidated by a trans player running out, whether they're 42 years old or whether they're, you know, 23 years old. You know, every footballer comes in different shapes and sizes.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Today saw the launch of Carlton Pride, an LGBTI supporters group for fans of the Carlton Football Club. Shannon Power spoke to longtime Blues supporter and founder of Carlton's Pride group, David Gould, and Emily Pilling, General Consumer Marketing Manager at the Carlton Football Club, about today's launch and what it means for the club.
Oh, well, I suppose I've been a Carlton supporter since I was born. In fact, even though I live in Richmond, and my father was born in Richmond, my mother was born in Carlton, so we were brainwashed at birth. Lose, lose, lose.
And what is it that you love about the Carlton Football Club?
Well, I just think that they have turned into a fantastic community club where they want to involve all of their supporters. I think it's probably a turnaround from many years ago. They were known to not quite be like that, but I think nowadays they are, and I think it's a very positive move, both for example, women, but also for gay people and others in the community. Because I've been going to the football for a number of years by myself, and I actually didn't know any other gay and lesbian supporters of football, and certainly didn't know any other Carlton supporters. So I suppose it started with the idea of just wanting to go to the football with another gay person, but it grew from there because I then found out there were a lot of other GLBTI pride groups. There are 13 now around, and they all share the same aim, which is to make football a safe environment for gay and lesbian people.
So you weren't aware that there actually pride groups already existed at other clubs, and this is an idea that you kind of had not knowing that, is that right?
Yes, that's correct, yeah. And in fact, there weren't, as I said, I think there were about 13 now, but there certainly weren't 13 when I was first looking. But no, I didn't know of their existence, but it's been fantastic to find out that they in fact do exist and are beginning to form a peak body that can be a voice for all of us.
Getting these initiatives off the ground is always a challenge, especially in older institutions like the AFL. Shannon asked David how he got started and how the club supported him.
But the first thing I did was to put down on paper some of my thoughts about where I wanted it to go in terms of equality for people and making football a safe place for everyone. And once I did that, I contacted Emily and she kindly met me at Carlton Football Club. And I think we went away from that meeting thinking, well, David needs to do some work if he wants to get this off the ground. So what I did in the intervening weeks was set up the page on Facebook. And since then I've had Dennis, one of our co-conveners, come on board about 2 months ago. And we've also got Ben now, a third co-convener. And we've formed a small committee. We had our very first formal committee meeting last week. So I guess it's about building relationships.
Emily Pilling from the Carlton Football Club saw the value in what David brought to the table. Here she is talking to Shannon about why Carlton was so eager to jump on board.
It's been really important to us since Stephen Triggs' appointment. Our main focus and purpose has been to ensure all of our Carlton people feel like we belong. We believe as part of our DNA, diversity and inclusion are an important part of that. And we want to be able to create a sense of belonging for all of the people that follow our great football club. So this has been a really important component in creating that diversity and inclusion for everyone. And this was a piece that was missing for us.
Can you give us an idea what kind of other initiatives the Carlton Football Club has done around diversity and inclusion? Have there been any other kind of LGBTI initiatives that you've run?
Unfortunately, the LGBTI community has been something that's happening as we speak now. Previous to now, we've been focused on our gender equality stance, and that has been also with a lens of prevention of family violence. So our Carlton Respects program, which is in its second year, and we just celebrated our game last week, was the leader in our equality space. And now we're linking this on because inclusion for everyone is important, is the work that we want to start doing now with the LGBTI space.
Emily and David then go on to explain what it now means that the Pride group has been officially recognised by the club.
So it means that we are able to officially talk about the group broadly to our supporter base, that they are awarded an authority to make decisions and run events, and we support them at a greater level by us at the club. But what it means to them is to be recognised by us as a club and to be able to show that people of all types are part of our football club, and that's important to show that for them they want to be encouraging and respectful of all, and for them to take this official status, it helps them in doing that.
I think it has two main points. One is, as I said before, for GLBTI people to be able to attend the football and to feel that they're in a safe environment, and that in fact if something does happen in terms of homophobic abuse, that something will be done about it. So that's the first thing. And the second is building community within our own GLBTI community so that we can have events where people can meet up, enjoy talking about football, but also enjoy each other's company and making new contacts.
It's really an opportunity for people to come together with like-minded people to be in a supportive and respectful environment, whether that be at the football or at events prior to football games. Something that's really important to the group is not just people who represent the LGBTI community, but also their allies. So it's very important for them that the group is inclusive, and the idea around it is to come together, whether it be before games or at games, to have a supportive community.
So how do you get involved? Let's hear from Carlton Pride founder David Gould.
Well, it's quite easy, really. All they have to do is go onto Facebook and look up Carlton Pride and ask us to become a member, and we'll approve that. And then once you get onto the Facebook page, we have all of the information there, and including upcoming events. In fact, in a couple of weeks, we'll be having drinks with the Purple Bombers prior to our match with them at the MCG on August the 5th. So that's our next upcoming event, and we'd be very, very happy to have people come along. And we're particularly looking for women members, because we really do want to involve women in our page and our club.
As we've heard, David has supported the Blues for years. When asked how it feels now that the Pride group is in place at a club he's loved his whole life, he had this to say.
We were absolutely over the moon. We met with them a day ago, and both Emily and Nick from Carlton Football Club were just so supportive. We were, in fact, taken aback by how supportive they were. And, in fact, we've been crowing a little bit, I must say, within the Pride group, because whilst other groups do have the support of their club, some don't. And hopefully Carlton coming on board with us will encourage other clubs to do the same.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
The Referendum Council was tasked with consulting with Indigenous people across Australia by the government to find a capable way of attracting the necessary support of the Australian people. There has been talk of constitutional recognition and a treaty. Following talks at Uluru, the council rejected the idea of constitutional recognition. On Monday, the Referendum Council decided that a referendum should be held on one topic only, and that's the formation of a voice to Parliament, which would be a national Indigenous representative body. Declan Fry is a regular presenter at Joy's Urban Dreaming Show. He spoke to Shannon Power about what the decision means.
All right, Declan, thanks for joining us on The Informer. Now, we've had a decision come out of the Referendum Council recently. What's your take on it? What do you think?
Yeah, I did have a look at the Referendum Council's report, and I urge anyone who is interested to go and take a look at the report, because it's very clear there's essentially just two recommendations, and one is a referendum that will provide in the Australian Constitution for an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander First Nations voice to Parliament, and the other one was a declaration of recognition that would be largely symbolic and hasn't been talked about so much in the media, but that perhaps is understandable. I think I was surprised in the media that, although it was very pleasing to see that it looks like there's bipartisan support from Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten, there's likely to be some confusion for those who just look at the media, and that's why I urge people, if they're interested, to just look at the Referendum Council report. Because, for example, I noticed Senator Linda Burney had mentioned that there was, she was surprised that the race power and talk of reforming that section of the Constitution, which provides for the power to make laws for certain races and has been known to be used at times in regard to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, that had not been a recommendation. But I think, look, it's a very simple proposal of just two recommendations. And in any case, the first recommendation for a voice to Parliament does say that outside the Constitution, they've recommended that that voice would look at things like the race power and would inform Parliament when laws are made in that area. And that's affected a few things in the past politically in Australia where that power has come into play.
I guess for you, though, why is it important for people to go straight to the Referendum Council's report?
There's just an absolute wealth of information there. I remember, I think, once hearing something, I can't remember what event it was, but it was an anecdote about people wanted to know, you know, what did the Kuru Mail say about it? The idea being that among the media, something like the Kuru Mail is one of the few media outlets that goes into detail about the real substance and different perspectives when it comes to issues affecting Aboriginal Australia. And look, this report, I mean, contains such a wealth of information in terms of all of the state-by-state processes that have taken place and articles and various other sort of things that just look at it from in terms of culture and history and politics. And it's fairly concise. You know, it's an education really for people. I think there is that part of what reconciliation, you know, in the last few decades has been about, has been to educate and to let people know about things that, you know, so often we hear people claim, you know, why weren't we told, I think is the Henry Reynolds phrase, claim not to have been told. And it's not just about the recommendations, although they're there and you can see very clearly exactly what it was that was recommended. But just all that background, having that there as well, I think could also be of great interest to people.
That's it for another episode of The Informer. We'll be back tomorrow at 6:30 to bring you the day's big news from an LGBTI perspective. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au/podcasts or wherever you prefer to download your podcast. We'd like to thank tonight's guests Simona Castricum, David Gould, Emily Spilling and Declan Fry for speaking with us. And we'd like to thank our team, Shannon Power, for putting together tonight's show. My name is Daniel Roberts. You've been listening to The Informer. Up next on Joy is Gary Wilson with the news, followed by Unicorn Youth.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.